top five anything just gives me anxiety, to be very honest with you. Yeah. That I'm like,
what's up, listeners? Welcome to this Force 5 mini episode. I am your host, Jason Kleberg. On today's show, we're going to wrap up last week's show with Jericho Ridge director Will Gilby. We'll recap what I've seen this past week, ending with Alex Garland's newest film, Civil War. And before I sign out, I'll reveal next week's guest and topic. First up, a shout out to those who got what I was doing with last week's review. I got some confusing messages, some people who are like, post a picture of the VHS tape or it never happened, and just questioning me having a copy of Shazam. Guys, it was April Fool's. I wanted to do something funny. There were a couple of you who got it and sent me nice messages about that joke. So for those who got it, thanks. And for those who didn't, keep searching for your copy of Shazam in used bookstores. Last week, Will Gilby joined me to do top five badass female protagonists, but the name of the game is Force 5. And with so many great badass female protagonists, the internet was quick to let us know what we missed.
Not in the top five, did they get it right?
Excuse my language.
Okay.
Hell no. I can't believe. Who made that list? Who made that? That's blasphemous.
Don't look at me.
That's blasphemous.
Over on the Cinematics Facebook page, which I highly recommend you join, Brian O'Connell said Nora Charles from the Thin Man film series. I have not seen those. Past guest and friend of the show, Mitch Burns, said Sarah from The Descent is badass. Yeah, The Descent is a badass movie. I need to revisit that. I don't think I've seen it since it came out. Andrew Dykstra said, I mean, Furiosa, come on. And yeah, I agree. Amazing. Badass. Joseph Navarro said Mary Elizabeth Winstead in Kate. Nathan Day, Sidney Prescott stands tall in my book, yep, from Scream. Lencho Rubio said Charlize Theron as Lorraine Broughton in Atomic Blonde. Stephen Primo said ScarJo as Lucy and Betty Gilpin as Crystal in The Hunt. Todd Teague said Noomi Rapace as Lisbeth Salander in the original and best Girl with the Dragon Tattoo series of films. Over on Twitter, 1999, the podcast said Lola from Run Lola Run, which made Will's list. Dissect That Film said Samara Weaving's character from Ready or Not. Yeah, she was definitely badass. Cinema Trip Reviews said The Bride. At Wesley Seberg said Gloria from the movie Gloria, starring Gina Rowlands. I just watched that because of Will's recommendation at the end of that show, and yeah, she is definitely a badass character. At Matt Stillam said Clarice Starling from Silence of the Lambs. The Brave One was actually also mentioned. At Tokyo underscore Joey said Ghost Spider from the Into the Spider-Verse films, Sarah Connor, Princess Leia from the Star Wars series, and Trinity from the Matrix series. Tons of great badass female protagonists. We might have to do that list again. We might have to do a part two of that one because there were so many that after we finished recording, I was kicking myself thinking, man, I should have included her. All right, on to the things I've been watching. In terms of TV series, I started the Fallout TV series. I've only seen the pilot up to this point. It's like an hour and 15 minutes long. And let me tell you, it is badass. Fallout is one of my favorite, it probably is my favorite game series of all time. And just seeing that on screen with all the references, the way it looks, it is so perfect. It's awesome. There's 8 episodes. Like I said, I've only seen one, but I can't wait to dive into it. I was holding back. I was geeking out so hard inside. There are so many Easter eggs that I even in just the first episode where it's like the person who wrote this or the people that write this show have to love this video game series because there are just little things there. There's a little like snippet of a kid coming out of a refrigerator, and it's one of those things where that's a side mission that many people probably missed in Fallout 3, and there's a reference to it here. I'm just so in love with this series after just one episode, so Fallout, I'm gonna watch the rest of it and I'll let you know what I think, but really, really strong start. I revisited The Monster Squad, which I wrote on Twitter was the movie that the Goonies wanted to be. I love The Monster Squad from 1987. I'm trying to get either the actor or Fred Decker, the director, on this show, so hit them up and tell them they got to come on Force 5. That would be amazing. I also revisited Samurai Cop from 1991, which is just an amazing, terrible movie. If you've never seen Samurai Cop, do yourself a favor. Grab a joint and a beer. Watch that with some friends. It's a really, really good time. I also watched the Netflix documentary, What Jennifer Did. And man, this documentary could have been really compelling, but the way that it's edited and the way that it's laid out, It doesn't leave anything to the imagination, starting with the title, What Jennifer Did. There are no mysteries to this thing where it could have been one of those, you get a twist in the middle, you didn't know it was going that way. But unfortunately, didn't work out. I gave that one 2 stars on Letterboxd. And I also watched the kid classic from 1985, Daryl, which was recently released by Vinegar Syndrome. Another great throwback to the Amblin times, those Josh and Sam type of movies. Daryl is it's a lot of fun. I also watched the new Alex Garland film, Civil War, which came out in theaters this weekend.
All across America, critics are raving about the movie event of the year.
It is American, 100%. That's what I'm talking about.
Cool.
Going to D.C.
Are you serious? The interstates are vaporized. They shoot us on sight in the Capitol.
I've never been scared like that before, and I've never felt more alive.
Holy fucking shit!
You watch. Soon as D.C. falls, they'll turn on each other.
Whatever happens, we don't quit.
Oh my God.
You don't want to miss this.
God bless America.
Civil War, rated R. Get tickets now.
Civil War is the newest and supposedly last directorial effort from Alex Garland, who has said that he's going back to strictly writing after this. Here's the plot according to Letterboxd. In the near future, a group of war journalists attempt to survive while reporting the truth as the United States stands on the brink of civil war. Now that is not 100% correct. We are dropped into New York City near the end of the newest civil war. California and Texas have formed an alliance called the WF, and they're pushing their way towards the White House to get the president to surrender while he's proclaiming great military victories across the land. Florida has formed their own government, it's about time. And anyway, we tag along with Lee Smith. No, not the famous St. Louis Cardinals closer. This is a renowned war photographer named Lee Smith, played by Kirsten Dunst. She and her partner, Joel, have a goal to get to the White House to interview the president, who has not given a public interview in over 4 years because the press is considered an enemy of the state under this new regime. Tagging along with them are Lee's mentor Sammy, an old-school journalist looking to get what may be his last big story, and a budding photographer named Jesse who has no idea what she's getting into. As usual, let's start with what I liked. I was lucky enough to see this in IMAX because I didn't want to make a trip over the Bay Bridge into the city, but while the screen wasn't true IMAX, the sound was crazy, and I would recommend seeing this in a theater with the biggest screen and loudest audio that you can. The visuals in this film are jaw-dropping. While the iconic photo of soldiers posted up in the Statue of Liberty torch featured on the poster isn't in the film, there are several shots that will stick with you for a long, long time. There are too many to list, but chilling shots like a mass grave filled with Americans, the press SUV driving through a burning forest, and a siege on the Capitol were absolutely breathtaking. This was heightened by the sound design, which honestly was my favorite part of the film. The sound in this is so crisp and so jarring that I physically jumped at certain points. There are a couple of needle drops in this that had me almost in a trance while I was admiring the visuals, only to be interrupted by immediate gunfire, and it felt like I was snapping back into reality. While the scenes set in war zones are audio-visual feasts, it doesn't feel like any of this frame was wasted. Every shot is interesting, striking, ponderous. There's a simple scene in which Lee is talking to Jesse in front of a pond, and the way it's shot with the water in the background softened and out of focus, giving us an incredible bokeh effect, was utterly beautiful. With a lesser director, shots like that wouldn't stick out. So shout out to Alex Garland. This film looks and sounds beautiful. Kirsten Dunst puts on a tour de force performance as Lee, a role that I could see her snagging a nomination for. When we meet her, she's smart, she's jaded, she has no regard for her own safety as she constantly puts herself in harm's way for another iconic snapshot. Her mantra is that you can't think about the inhumanity and atrocities you're witnessing, you're there to document them and let others do the thinking. As the film rolls on, you finally start to see that facade crack a bit when she incurs a personal loss, and it's a very powerful moment. The ever-entertaining Wagner Moura plays her sidekick Joel. He's an adrenaline junkie who chain-smokes and drinks when he's not getting his rush from the war. but he's loyal. He's really fun on screen. He adds a bit of levity to moments that need it. Yet, he's not immune from the horrors of war, and after one of the film's more terrifying sequences, he's able to release his anguish in a shot that will certainly live in my head rent-free. Sammy is played by Stephen McKinley Henderson. He's always fantastic. He's this kind of stationary sage in the car, offering advice to his mentors, old and new, and is the rationality in the vehicle. He gets a heroic moment that garnered claps from the older folks at my screening. It was a really great moment, to be honest. And then finally, there's Kaylee Spaney, who is pretty good as Jessie, although there weren't any moments that made me think this young woman is a star. For some reason, I think there was a lack of electricity to her performance that could have taken it to another level. I mean, look, it didn't help that she was acting alongside Kirsten Dunst, who is shaping up to be one of cinema's all-time greats. There were also a few cameo roles that were great. Nick Offerman is on screen only for a few minutes as the president, but that was nice to see. Made me think, hey, Ron Swanson ascended to the White House. And Jesse Plemons pulls an Alec Baldwin in Glengarry Glen Ross by stealing the show with one scene as an uncompromising military personality with his iconic plastic red glasses. Overall, I thought the actors were amazing in this film, and I could see some attention from the Academy coming next year. Now, as for what I didn't like, I'm glad I sat with this movie for a bit before I wrote about what I didn't like, because my first reaction was to go after the movie for not having anything to say about politics. And it's true, the movie doesn't have a stance. As you can tell from the plot summary at the beginning of this review, California and Texas working together, it's an alternate universe that injects politics on the same level as Top Gun Maverick. In that movie, the antagonists were an unnamed country filled with people who only wore blacked-out jet helmets. In this movie, there are two sides to American politics, but they're not Democrat and Republican. They're just something. We don't get any sense of what anybody stands for other than where you're from, and I actually think that's to the film's detriment. My guess is that Garland didn't want to offend one side or the other. I mean, you are trying to sell the maximum amount of movie tickets and viral idiotic Facebook posts telling all of your like-minded friends to boycott a film because it takes the stance you don't like isn't going to get butts in seats. But if you're going to plunge the United States into civil war, at least explain it. All we get are some pieces of information through the radio. The president has had a third term, someone compares him to other dictators, but that's it. The war part of this story lacks balls. Then again, the story isn't about the war per se, it's about the war journalists and what their jobs entail, the horrors and responsibilities of that profession. And when you look at Civil War from that lens, it still doesn't have anything to say. It sort of telegraphs Jessie's journey at the beginning of the film, but her transformation from excited, doe-eyed, hopeful photographer to "I'm gonna get this shot even if it kills me or the people around me" persona felt rushed and a little bit unlikely. Also, I'm not gonna get into spoilers here, but there's a death near the end of the movie that felt extremely corny and unnecessary simply to pay off a line that somebody says earlier in the film. I actually think the movie would have been better off without that death. To close, Alex Garland's Civil War looks and sounds amazing, and it is highly entertaining as a road trip picture, but if you're looking for a film that has something to say about anything, you're barking up the wrong tree. I gave Civil War 3.5 stars on Letterboxd. I would recommend checking this out in theaters, as long as you go in simply looking for entertainment and not an in-depth look at what could actually plunge us into civil war, or what those consequences might look like on a large scale. So that wraps up Force 5, episode 144. If you haven't rated or reviewed the Force 5 podcast, now is a good time to do so. And if you're not subscribed, you should do that so that you get a Monday reminder that there's a new show up. Join me next week for episode 145, where actor and writer Ashley Hargrove joins me to talk top 5 tearjerkers.